Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Tabatabai. I'm joined by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. Fellas, the Celtics are riding a 7-game win streak. And to break it all down, we bring in from NBC Sports Boston, your friend and mine, Chris Forsberg. Chris, how are you?
What's going down, everybody? Is everybody doing as good as this team?
No, but they're
not as good as this
second place. Ain't bad, you know? Yeah, Chris, so we got a little bit of in the way of news to talk about, but really what we're going to do is we're going to play a game called Fact, Fiction, or what did we call it? Not Enough Data, Too Soon to Tell. So we'll give you some prompts, and you'll tell us if it's all right. For real, not so much for real, or you're still waiting to make your decision. Alex, Justin, things are good?
Yep, can't complain. Thanksgiving break is almost here, so I'm excited.
Last night of my men's league. I'm going to burn that place down metaphorically. Okay, anyways, Celtics, since we last talked, big win over Denver, nice win over Detroit, and most recently last night, pretty convincing comeback win led by Marcus Smart against the Thunder. That's 7 games in a row for Boston, and they're looking to win their 8th against Atlanta on the road on Wednesday. Chris, what are you seeing from this win streak that is really making you excited for the Celtics anyways?
Probably just the variety of ways they've had to win. I think that's what made even last night, sleepy Monday in November against a team on a back-to-back that you're probably not thinking you got to get up for, and then they come out and they kick you in the teeth for the first 2.5 quarters. I think Marcus Smart said it best afterward. Like, that's a game they lose last year, and so there has been progress at least. That they can get the guard in that loud and actually dig in on defense when they want to. And look, I know it's the Thunder and poor Josh Giddey getting abused by Derek White and Peyton Pritchard and all that, but those little things matter to me, like finding a way, being able for Jason Tatum to carry you when you don't have 4 starter quality players out there in Detroit and just carry you to a game. Being able to just be the best offense in the league by 3.5 points or whatever they are, you know, so I'm really excited about the way they're finding ways to win. And I don't think they're anywhere near what they'll be at the end of the year and what they could be once Rob comes back. And so, but you see the pockets of it. And if they can eliminate some of the consistency woes, like, this could be really good. And I mean, it's already really good. Like, when they were 3-2, I was worried. And then now you look up in there 11-3 or whatever it was, you feel a lot better about it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, last night, it was interesting. They doubled Shea, SGA for a while, and the Thunder were thus getting everything open from 3. But then the Celtics also went 5 of 25 from 3 in the first half. So it felt like they were close to figuring it out. But then, like you said, the fourth quarter, the veteran team pulled it out. You mentioned Rob Williams. We'll get to him in a little bit. But do you get the sense from the team that they are comfortable with his rehab? Joe Mazzulla kind of said as such the other day, but you're closer to the action than we are. What do you think the team feels about the state of rehab?
Yeah, I'm always like, I think my antenna goes up a little bit when everything is like super positive, but you know, hopefully that's the truth. And, you know, from all indications and the way Rob's, when you just see him walking around, like, you feel pretty good. I'd feel a lot better if I could watch him do his little dunking behind the scenes and all that. But since we're not privy to that, we just, we take it at face value. I think they've already said that they'll be super cautious bringing him back. So if there was any trepidation, that if there was any inkling he might not make this 8 to 12 week timeline, I think they'd be pumping the brakes pretty hard. And the fact that they're going the other way is really encouraging. And to me, it's just, I always thought it would be more towards mid-December, but like, even mid-December feels like a long ways away now. So it just comes down to how he feels, and they will be cautious here just because of how it played out. But you know, selfishly, damn, I want to see him out there and just doing Time Lord things. And so I hope it's more like early December, and maybe you ease him back in and don't play him on the second nights of back to backs and whatever the case may be. But I'm eager for us to get even more excited when he's like out on the court warming up, even though he's not ready to come back yet, and and all those things.
Yeah, he's been practicing and with the team, but yeah, he's still a step or two away, it looks like. We got an update on Brogdon last night that he just tested out his hamstring, and they said, you know, a little tight, not worth pushing the envelope there. You have any update on your end on where Brogdon's at?
Yeah, we're recording this. I'm waiting for the Hawks injury report, right? Like, sure. I feel like he's got Atlanta roots, and that's probably a game he wants to be a part of. You think about him and Jalen going down there during the protests, and so I would think that's a game he'd be motivated for. Felt like they were treading cautiously in with bringing him back. Like, this is just something with him, right? Like, there's been history in Indiana where he had hamstring tightness, and they had to try carefully. This is why you have Peyton Pritchard around. So I don't worry too much about if he's got to miss another game or two here, but I would suspect if they're true with the whole day-to-day thing, it's just a matter of when he's comfortable, not enough to re-aggravate it. And we know with Jalen, like, that was a big deal. So they're just going to find their way with that.
Sure. Alex and Justin, I'll go to you for a little bit. During this 7-game win streak, what is the thing that has been most exciting to you?
What's been most exciting to me is the entrenchment of Jason Tatum as a true blue MVP candidate. I don't know how you don't start there. I just feel like the thing that's kind of stood out to me is he's really affecting every single phase of the game. Offensively, he's scoring, he's rebounding, he's getting out in transition. He's scoring in both the half court and, you know, in transition sets. And, you know, he's hitting threes at a really high clip, 39%, and taking 10 threes a game. He's also getting to the line a lot more, trying to finish through contact, an area that he prioritized as a focus point this offseason. He's passing the ball really well. Most of the time, it's getting to be an assist, not always, but the passes look good on the court as well. But I mean, you can't talk about Jason Tatum's improvement this season without talking about what he's doing on the defensive end. Joe Mazzulla using Jason Tatum in the Robert Williams Rover spot has been a fascinating wrinkle to watch play out on the court. And you've seen it time and time again throughout this year where he's, you know, coming over from the weak side to pack shots in the lane, or he's getting rebounds in traffic or cutting off angles to the basket. You know, it's been a really exciting development that I think both raises his ceiling as a player long-term and raises the Celtics team ceiling just as a whole. So that's been awesome to watch.
Only thing I can add to that really is the bench. The bench has been really good at bailing the team out in moments where last season they just had nothing. So seeing that and seeing how, you know, in conjunction with what you were referring to with Tatum, basically finding ways to will the team to wins in conjunction with that, I think is creating a baseline of expectations, at least for me, where someone, for example, on this call who shall remain nameless and had no faith once we heard the injury report regarding a schedule loss, I actually disagreed. And this, the way that they've been playing, both the bench, both Jason Tatum, like everything together, that has been the most surprising in a good way thing about this team so far this season for me.
Cool. Want to jump in with one more thing. You know, this is a player that I think is often in the shadow of Jason Tatum and has been actually getting a little bit of guff for his play lately in terms of his decision making and the fact that he still turns the ball over a little bit and the fact that he you know, has lapses defensively. But Jaylen Brown has been great this year. I mean, that guy is playing really well. He's scoring arguably more efficiently than he ever has been. And yes, there are still some holes in Jaylen's game, particularly as a ball handler and decision maker. But let's not use that and focus on that and overlook the fact that he is very much on pace to be in the All-Star, All-NBA consideration for this year. He's playing really, really well, guys.
Yeah. There's been a couple times where, like, specifically in the second quarter or the end of the first, when Tatum rests, Jalen just hits, you know, three or four, like, pretty contested shots, and it really keeps the offense afloat. Okay, a little more in the way of news, and then, Chris, we're going to play that game that we teased off the top. We're just going to make mention of it. I know that some people are very sick and tired of talking about the off-the-court stuff, but off-the-court stuff keeps popping up. Jaylen Brown, who is a vice president of the Players Association, was asked last night about his comments regarding Joe Tsai, who said of Kyrie Irving he has some work to do vis-a-vis coming back to play. And last night, Jaylen gave a pretty, I don't want to say long-winded, but a pretty detailed account of how he sees it from his point of view as a peer to Kyrie Irving, but more importantly, as his one of his representatives in the union. I said as such, I don't know that I agree wholeheartedly with Jalen, but as someone who's in a union, I'm wearing my union red right now. I really appreciate his care around this issue. I think some people will disagree with me. I think some people will disagree with me in the complete opposite direction. But this, there's so many shades to gray with how this thing has spun out. Yeah, Justin?
Yeah, just real briefly, I think people just need to remember that when you're a union representative, you have to represent the union, not yourself. So we may not know how Jalen feels personally about this. We do need to keep in mind that he is a VP and he is doing his job in the context of what he's saying here.
Sure. Forsberg, you can weigh in. You can also say, let's get to the game. We didn't prime your pump.
No, I think you guys nailed it. Like, it is interesting. I do wonder how much the casual observer is invested in it. And so I always try to tread the line between there's so many people that just want to watch the basketball game and divorce the other side of it. And yet it'd be ignorant to think that there's not people that are also the opposite, that are kind of like, hey, why is Jalen tweeting this? Or why does he feel this way? And so, but yeah, there's always the balance of personal relationships and how you feel. And credit to Jalen for at least being willing to speak on the matter. Cause like, you know, there's a lot of guys who would just prefer to kind of shut it down.
For sure. To that end, we have a few episodes from a few weeks back where we dove into this with a little more rigor. We'd love doing that on this podcast, but we also love playing fun games. So we'll keep it moving. check out Celtics Lab on Twitter. We got a giveaway coming up. How's that for a tease? All right, Chris, I'm going to pause the action, talk about our friends over at betonline.ag, and away we will go. Football is back, and BetOnline is your number one source for all your football betting needs and sports info this season. Basketball as well. Find all the latest football and basketball odds, news, game matchups, and all of this year's lines. BetOnline is your continued source for all your wagering information, including live betting, pre-contests, and live scores. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. You can head to betonline.ag today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just make sure to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive that reward. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, let's start that game. So, Forsberg, we're calling it fact, fiction, or too soon to tell. This rolls off the tongue. Those are your options. We'll give you a prompt. You tell us that's fact, and you can go into great detail, or you can just keep it moving. You can say it's fiction, or you can say, you know what, I'm not ready to plant a flag. I am going to ask questions about the general NBA. Justin will ask questions about the Celtics as a team, and Alex will ask questions about the Celtics players, and we'll shuffle the deck to keep things moving. How's that?
All right. I'll try to be succinct, you know, but we'll see how that goes.
All righty. Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston. Fact, fiction, or too soon to tell, Utah, Portland, and Washington are good basketball teams.
I mean, it depends on what your definition of good is, but I will say they're playing good basketball now. Do I think they will be playing that, all of them, in 3 months? I would say fiction. There's just, you know what, like I look at Utah and I say, you know what they could really use to be a surefire playoff team is a Donovan Mitchell. And you know, like, that's unfair. That's, they're a fun team to watch. Will Hardy is completely out kicking the talent he's been given. But you know what, like Danny Ainge, that's the fascinating part to me. What does he do? Does he go try to get them more talent, use some of those draft picks, or does he just sort of, if things start going the other way a little bit and they kind of turn back into what we think they are, does he kind of prioritize the draft and all that? But I'll say this, it's good when previously bad teams are fun. And of all of them, Utah is the one I'm most fascinated by, but certainly, you know, Washington and the Bradley Beal situation, you're always kind of keeping an eye on that. And so it's fun to see those teams in the mix.
Sure. Utah doesn't come to Boston until March 31st, so we might not get to ask Danny that for a while. all right, Justin, I'll swing to you. Ask a question about the Celtics.
So one of the most interesting things of the season so far, and in polar opposite nearly of last season, has been this not just good, but historic offense. Is this sustainable?
I would say, you know, it's funny, like I live in fear that Rob's going to come back and then the offense, for whatever reason, is going to not be as crisp and everyone's going to blame Rob. And I'm already like getting my defenses and excuses ready for why that might be. In theory, it should be even better with a rim runner. Now it'll clog the floor a little more, maybe not as spaced as it can be, but you can still do that with second and reserve lineups. I'm fascinated to see what it is. I do think nothing about their shot profile, about the way they're playing, it should change dramatically as long as they value the basketball. I mean, in fact, like, I'm watching these games and I'm thinking there's lulls in these games where they could be even better offensively. And that's absurd when you think about 118 something, you know, rating right now. And so I think it's sustainable. I do think there will be some regression as they put a heavier emphasis on defense and just the expending of energy, but they should still be a top five offense no matter what, based on what we've seen. And if Jason Tatum's playing like this, like, you're just going to be in that conversation.
Cool. Alex.
I'm going to hop in. We got that. We got the update at questionable for Brogdon.
There. We'll see.
There you go. Humble listener. He's questionable.
Well, speaking of Boston point guards, so as it stands right now, Marcus Smart is over his last five games averaging 12 points, 9 assists, and 3.5 rebounds. He is also second on the NBA.com Defensive Player of the Year ladder, which would be a repeat for the reigning Defensive Player of the Year. So, Chris Forsberg, I turn it to you. Fact, fiction, or not enough data, Marcus Smart will finish the year as a top 10 point guard and a repeat DPOY winner.
I would say back to the first part. Like, I think he's already, when you look at the numbers, the way the Celtics play when he's been the pure point guard, you eliminate the Schroeder Smart minutes from last year, and the plus minus was off the charts, the net rating, all that stuff. So I think he's in that conversation. I know it's still hard for people to be like, oh, is he a pure point guard? Like, come on. Like, how much more data do we need to understand that this guy is pretty incredible in directing it? I think Jason and Jalen and Marcus, you know, like the Marcus and Jalen and Marcus and Jason are two of the top five assist combos in the NBA right now. And it just shows, like, 65 of his 99 assists have gone to those guys. He makes them better, and that's what a point guard is supposed to do. And so we can yell about the shot selection. The DPOY stuff will all depend. If the Celtics defense goes up to back to a top 10 defense, someone's going to get credit, but I suspect, like, Rob would get the credit because he's the guy who came back and then everything switched. But certainly Marcus can throw himself in that conversation. A good place to start would be Wednesday night. If your friendly listeners are ramping up for that Hawks game, you know, big guards have been his bugaboo. And so can he dig in against guys like DeJounte and be ready? And, you know, that, but we know Marcus can do it when it matters. I just don't know. Voters always love the new thing, and I think it's going to be very hard for him to repeat after having finally wrestled one of those things away.
All right, we're going to swing back to you, Cam.
Sure. We wrote this down before Embiid went just like Godzilla mode the other day, but Chris Forsberg, I want to know, is it fact, fiction, or is it too soon to tell that Philadelphia and Miami are meh teams? And you can also take a stab at the Clippers or the Pacers if you have anything there.
So, you know, so hard. Like, there's so much talent. And when Embiid wants to play great, it's so hard for me to say they're a meh team. I do think they're just going to linger, you know, and and we'll see if they're in the mix. Miami's fascinating. Like, they're the one that you want to scream meh every year, and then they sort of figure it out. But I just, watching them, like, I don't see how it happens. Unless you're just talking about Jimmy Butler being great in crunch time moments and willing games that way. Like, I still don't want to see him in a playoff series because it would be a war. But I guess, like, you know, if you told me that the Celtics were going to have to go through Miami and Philly this year, I'd be less worried than I would if you're telling me other teams, like, having to go through even, I mean, obviously the Bucks. And we'll see how the rest of the East shakes down. But I'm not ready to, besides Embiid going supernova, I haven't had that moment where I'm like, wow, Philly's a real problem. And as long as Harden's there, probably feel that way.
Cool. I'm always surprised with whatever. I look at the box score and say, oh, Philly won, I'm surprised. And then they lose, I think, oh, that's surprising, they've lost. I don't know what to expect from the Sixers. All right, JQ, you're up.
Fact, fiction, or too soon to tell, the defense will not be as good as last season?
Again, I'm like, there's always this balance. I feel like, and maybe I need to get actual hard data on this, but Anytime a team's offense plays far beyond what we've seen in the past, there seems to be a direct correlation between the defensive intensity that pursues. And so it's nice to know they can do it. And I think that's what the end of, again, even though it's the Thunder, it tells you that they can get back up to a level that can be a game changing defense. But will they finish? I think they were first or tied first or, you know, whatever by the end of last season. I probably don't see that just because they'd have so much gap to recover and based on what they've dug themselves out. But again, I'll judge it based on in the fourth quarter of a crunch time game against a really good team. Are they able to dig in? They haven't done that against Cleveland. That's another one of those like teams that I don't want to see in the playoffs more. I'd rather see Philly or Miami at this point. So yeah, well, hopefully some better competition will give us a better idea about where exactly the defense stands. Won't be as good as last year, but as long as they have the potential to get back to a level close to it, and you know some of that will hinge on Rob, I feel pretty good about it.
Pretty much my feelings as well, Alex.
All right. So one of the stories that has kind of not been talked about as much this year, but I think is kind of lingering in the background and has blossomed in recent days in particular, given this player's impressive run for the past couple of games. Peyton Pritchard is kind of the odd man out in the rotation with the arrival of Malcolm Brogdon and the Celtics' increased guard depth. So I put it to you, Chris Forsberg. Fact, fiction, or too soon to tell, Peyton Pritchard ends this season as a Boston Celtic.
Ooh, I don't want to let recency bias cloud my determination here. I guess this would be the first one I'll hedge on and say not enough data to know. 7 out of the first 10 DNPs, and when you can tell when Malcolm Brogdon's healthy and Derek White and Marcus Smart are doing what they're doing, I don't see a pathway for Peyton to get on the floor. It's an amazing little changeup you can throw out there. I thought it was neat that Missoula threw him in there early in the third of that Thunder game, looking for both energy and to just kind of go small and match what the Thunder were doing. But like how realistically often would you do that? You know, probably not enough to, if there's another trade value out there. So some of it will hinge on what they need. If like the big man, which I don't think will be as big of a deal as people make it out to be now when Rob is back, you know, if that's still an issue, if like Rob and Al just need time, then, you know, you got to go get somebody. You just don't have a lot of trade assets. The other complicating matter is like paying salary is nothing. And so you got to pair it with something. And so like, certainly you could do Gallinari and all that. It just comes down to, are you getting back what you're giving up? And I think there's still a lot of people in the organization that are high on Peyton, that are worried about Brogdon's health, that, you know, see a good value in it. So I see pathways to both instances. And we probably need to wait till Rob's out there and maybe closer to January 15th before we know for sure. But quite the luxury to have a guy. And credit to Peyton, because it's got to suck. You know, like, you know you can play and you know you can compete out there. And you shot 40% from three last year. And you got a team that's otherworldly offensively and you can't even get on the floor. So credit to him for sticking it out. I like his personality last night. He's sort of told us he doesn't want to talk about it. But, hey, I'm going to be professional. And when someone brought up like, well, you know, what's Blake been telling you and being that veteran guy in your ear? And he's like, oh, I hate Blake. So at least he's got a sense of humor about it. And that's all you can do in that situation. Just wait for your time. And hey, credit for being ready when it came.
Yeah. Last night I wrote Peyton needs to earn his minutes. And then I wrote Peyton is earning his minutes. And then I deleted it. And then I added it because it was a real yo-yo game. Sean Devaney of heavy.com suggested to us last week that a certain team out West that rhymes with the Muta Maz might be interested in Peyton Pritchard. So you might want to check that episode out.
Don't we just say that with like everybody that Danny drafted, like, you know, he's probably interested in this. I don't suspect he's going to go try to pry Romeo Langford out of San Antonio, but yeah, it's like players that have shown they have the Danny DNA are probably all on his radar.
He really does have the Danny DNA. I mean, he's a feisty, I was going to say feisty little guy. He's got like at least 4 or 5 inches on me, but
best offensive rebounder on the Celtics. So, you know, there's something to be valued there.
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, all the instincts are there. Derek White is a head taller and Brogdon's a little bit faster. All right, Forsberg, I got one more for you. And then I think I'm out of questions. And I'm actually going to change the game entirely for these. Of these four teams, I want you to rank them. Lakers, Warriors, Timberwolves, and Nets.
rank them in terms of like disaster or starts, or just in terms
disaster
of
disaster to less of a disaster.
The Warriors will figure it out. I never worry about them. And then there would be all the others, because I do not know if they're going to figure it out. Timberwolves are fascinating. It didn't make any sense what they were building this offseason. And while talent is king, you do have to have the right pieces that fit each other. And I think they're probably the most likely to figure it out. They were really fun last year. That game they had against Boston where Rob got hurt, I was lucky enough to be doing like sideline for that one and was up close for it. That was like maybe one of the most fun regular season games I can remember last year. And just like in terms of back and forth and intensity and like fun. So I hope they figure it out. I'm not a Gobert guy, so I don't know if they're ever going to get it right. Lakers are a train wreck. Like every time I see like they're something like 6 points worst offense, you know, like every time I want to gloat about the Celtics having being the best offense in the league by 3 points, I look at the Lakers and go, I think they're 15 points behind in like offensive rating. I don't know how you fix that. LeBron's gonna invariably will them to something, but I don't know what that something is. So yeah, everyone else is they got some work to do.
Yeah, free Westbrook.
Where do you free him?
I don't know.
it's a good position to be in if you're a Celtic fan. Like everything that is going right for you, and I think honestly, like if we bring this conversation full circle, you know, what's one of my biggest takeaways of the season as a whole? Like things could have gone sideways really fast with the Ime situation, with the injuries, with a tougher start to the year, a lot of road games and stuff like that. And you look up last night and you see 11-3, and I keep saying to myself, I'm like, wow, they've, you know, winning cures all, and it allows you to ignore stuff. And even just like the whole Ime Nets thing coming up, like that could have sent you sideways, but no, you're just rolling. So I thought it was important. They just keep that momentum going. So you feel pretty good about where they're at, their potential and all that. Just got to keep the focus on basketball. And I think these guys will be okay. And all those other situations, it's really hard to keep the focus on basketball when you're a miserable team.
Yeah, I think this is the tied for the fourth best start for the team since 2008. And that might even extend to the 21st century, but don't quote me on that. All right.
Too late. We just did.
Yeah, it's been aggregated, I'm
fake,
sure.
Fake stats are out there now. I'm jumping on it.
We just riff on the Celtics Live podcast. All right. Two more, and then we'll bid you an adieu, Justin.
So, fact, fiction, or too soon to tell, Mazzulla will be promoted from interim label midseason. Before you answer, we just learned from Mark Stein on the Stein Line newsletter that he will get credit for this season. Normally, it goes to whatever head coach is, you know, not the interim head coach. But because he will be the head coach for the entire season, he's going to get credit. Go ahead.
And it is crazy. So my guess has been, because a lot of people have asked this question, is that you just can't do it until there's a resolution with the Ime scenario. But I think we know now, based on what happened with the Nets pursuit, that the Celtics are planning to not have him back. And so at some point or another, there'll be a resolution point. And I do think he'll get elevated to just plain old head coach. And I think it'll be phrased as like, look, you know, he's our guy. We're committed to him. Maybe they, you know, you see Jacques Vaughn get the extra year tacked on. So you probably, it's not going to be just the rest of the season thing, but there'll be like an understanding that like, hey, you're our guy, but coaches live day to day in this world. And like, this doesn't mean he's going to be the head coach for 6 years. Now, certainly at 11-3 and with some of the innovation that he's brought, if we're giving him like full credit for like how good the offense has been and the cheeky clock run thing that they've been doing. And like, there's no reason to think he would be unseated from this job. And look, being thrown into this situation and being able to keep your head above water is the biggest, you know, reason why he deserves it there. Like a lot of people would have been their head spinning, and I'm sure his is, but he doesn't let on to it very often. And he's, you know, you see some of the personality coming out now in press conferences and being okay, kind of just like being himself. But it was the answer the other night, like we're all sitting here like, hey, man, your minutes, like this is crazy. What are you doing? And he's just like, yeah, most important thing is to win. And so like he understands it. He understands, like, probably been given that that decree from somewhere. And yeah, we'll see. But I hope for Joe's sake, and just like being able to coach, he gets that interim tag removed, just to settle in a little bit more.
I think you will. Alex.
All right. Chris Forberg, thank you so much for being here. We really
appreciate you. Got one more? I don't want to cut you short. I want to get around the horn.
Oh, I'm just setting you up here, man. Just let me cook here for a little bit. I do have one more question for you, and it's related to our kind of what we started the podcast off with, and what I started the podcast off with in particular. Jason Tatum is having a scorching start to the season. He is first currently in Vegas MVP odds. Chris Forsberg, fact, fiction, or too soon to tell, Jason Tatum will win the 2022-2023 NBA MVP award.
Let me do a preamble here with, like, Dan Shaughnessy came over to the game last night, and he's like, look, I need to talk to you for a second. He's like, what is going on? We're 12% of the way through the season and we're determining MVP. And I don't disagree, but as I tried to tell him, I was like, this is how it works in the NBA. We have like this conversation, and this goes for anybody as they sort of ascend the ladder. We say, is he a top 20 player? Is he a top 10 player? And then once they're in the top 10, we're like, shit, what do we do now? Like, okay, let's just determine if he's the MVP. So it's just like an easier way to frame the discussion around, like, Jason Tatum is really good right now, but is he really, really, really good, or is he just really good? So he's one of the, I would say, three best players in the NBA right now. Like, it's always hard to unseat Giannis because of what he does on both ends. And Luke is putting up crazy numbers, but those three have distinguished themselves. Maybe MB gets in there, but I'd feel a lot better if I watched that thing be successful. Although I say that, and then like Luka's Mavs are not exactly dominating right now either. But I think there's two things that have to happen. One, the Celtics have to finish ahead of the Bucks in the standings to give voters the, okay, yeah, like, he was the best player on the best team in the Eastern Conference. And unless there's like some surprise dark horse in there. And two, like, Tatum has to continue to evolve with this defense, because that's going to be the big thing that separates him, especially from Luka. And watching him want the Morant situation at the end of that game, blocking Donovan Mitchell in the OT game, I think we all knew he was a above average defender and probably didn't get enough credit for what he meant to this defense, because we've spent so much time talking about Smart and Rob and just the offense and defense as a whole. But if he continues to play like this, like, there's no way you're not going to be in the conversation. And I just hope he stays healthy, and like, his MO has always been to be out there and play games. And I think that's the other big thing for me here, is that if Giannis will invariably take nights off, you know, we'll see how many of the games Luka plays and if he's able to stay healthy. But you just feel like Tatum's going to play 76 games. You know, he's going to miss a couple, like, hopefully, knock on wood, there's not like his third year of COVID and missing a little bit. But maybe they just sneak him a night off in there somewhere. And if he does that, like, it's going to be really hard. Like, it's crazy that we can already kind of pencil him in for first team all NBA after, you know, last year and all that. And so it's neat that the conversation is there. The other thing I'd like to mold two of those two last topics, I love that Joe Mazzulla was like, I'm cool with this, that I'm cool with like Tatum being in that conversation right now. Cause that's what you want. You want your superstars to sort of get their flowers and to be, feel like what they're doing is translating into everyone taking notice. So credit for Tatum. I mean, even last night didn't have a great game. And like, I looked up, what do you have? 25 points against Thunder. It's like crazy. Like, dude didn't have it. And they were doing everything they could to keep the ball away from him at the end of the game. And yet he still had what we'd call a really good night. So yeah, good on Tatum.
Yeah. Shaughnessy, stuck to his guns. He asked Tatum what it felt like to be part of that conversation. He didn't tip his hand suggesting that it was a fair conversation. But to that end, I think Forsberg, the one thing that might upend it is media narratives getting tired. So let's pause the MVP talk and pick it back up again in March and use
to determine what the like perfect point to start the campaign is for all these guys, and like, that's when the media can gas it up. I will say my network needs something to talk about 5 days a week, and I'm sure whatever I'm going to next here is I'm going to be screaming about Jason Tatum and the MVP odds. So I will do my best, but no promises.
Cool. Well, then we won't keep you any longer. Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, thank you for coming on the podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you all.
Thank you.